You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ten-time Tony Award winner Mike Nichols is returning to Broadway with a new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal, starring Daniel Craig and Rachel Weisz as Robert and Emma, a married couple, and Rafe Spall as Jerry, Emma's lover and Robert's best friend. The play opens on October 27th, a week earlier than originally planned, at the Ethel Barrymore Theater on West 47th Street, and I'm so happy that it brings Mike Nichols back to our show today. Hello.
Hey.
Your last production on Broadway was Death of a Salesman, and many feel it's the great American play. Betrayal is nothing if not British.
It's very British. But I think it's, as they say, universal. And also it's by a man who was a friend of mine, Harold Pinter. And he meant a lot to me. It means a lot to me. I was meant to do the movie, but that didn't work out because of schedule stuff.
It was a pretty good film, anyway.
It was okay.
It would have been better if you directed it.
Oh, my God, no. God knows. Or it could have been worse, too. But I've been thinking about that play a lot in that weird way that you sometimes do, and you're not sure why. And I think the fractured nature of it is so brilliant that it, in some ways, is an imitation of what happens in your head when you look back over parts of your life. And it is not unlike the experience of a relationship, two relationships, three relationships of your life. And instead of, because I know it very well for a very long time, instead of getting a little tired of it, I just got more interested. And I got more interested and still more interested. And then as I began to talk to Daniel, first Daniel about it, and then Daniel and Rachel, it began to feel like something I really wanted to do.
Well, Daniel Craig was asked in an interview if he could have tolerated his wife's infidelity as his character does in this play, and his answer was something like, no, I'm too working class for that. Is this play about class as much as it's about memory?
I think it is somewhat about class, in that a publisher is by definition capital and an employer, and an agent is, what can I say, an agent. And the difference in the two guys' station in life is there, but it's stated very quietly because it's a difference that is elided in Britain much more than here. Capital here makes a lot of noise and is very flashy and has flashy buildings and dresses and apartments and lives. And in England, the emphasis is on hiding it.
So are most of Pinter's plays as much about what's not said as what is?
Oh, I think very much so.
Now, the last time it was done on Broadway was with American actors, and some critics questioned whether the language and the restraint in the play made it difficult for an American company to perform it credibly.
I think the very last time it was done here actually was with a French actress. It was Juliette Binoche. Hmm. It's been done with American actors. It was done, in that case, by one French actress and two American actors. It was done by Raoul Julia, the first American version.
Well, should it be done with a British accent under any circumstances?
I don't know that there is a should in these things because different people find different things in various plays. I was in a college production of Miss Julie and was deeply unhappy because we were so terrible. And then an awful thing happened is when Sidney J. Harris, the great critic in Chicago of the day, came up to the South Side and said we were wonderful. We had to do it for months. And on the last night, Arlene Peterson, who played my wife, came in late in the play, and she said, "What are you doing up so early and with your hat on?" And I thought, this is really interesting. We've played this play for over 3 months. She said this every night. I never heard it. The audience never heard it. I'm not wearing a hat. We were paying no attention by this point at all, and that was what was wrong with the whole play. We were all too bored to listen. And I had great contempt for that play because that had been my experience. Then I saw a brilliant version that Michael Grandage directed in London, adapted by Patrick Marber. And it took place in England after the war, just after the Labour election, the Labour victory. It was brilliant. It was real. It was scary. It was exciting. It was completely alive. He's a wonderful director. It was a wonderful adaptation, and it was brilliantly acted. Plays keep coming back in different forms, and that's one of the great things about them.
Well, does an American director bring something different to a play like this, even if it is with a British cast?
I think so. I don't know. Am I American? Am I German? Am I Russian? Am I Jewish?
I don't know. Are you?
I don't know myself. You know, all this stuff went in. I don't know what comes out. And I think that there is no director who isn't, if he's in the theater, isn't partly European, because so much of our theater is European, and so on and so forth. I think that one of the wonderful things about the theater and the job is that you can see something a new way after centuries have gone by. Last year there was a Hamlet in London that took your head off. It was so shocking. You heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Heitner did it with this brilliant, brilliant actor. And I swear to God, he sounded a lot of the time like he was improvising it and he was speaking the lines of Hamlet. It was so great. Steve Sondheim had seen it twice, and he made us fly to London to see it with him, for him to see it the third time and us to see, my wife and me, to see it for the first time.
Well, is that the greatness of Shakespeare? Because we have seen so many different interpretations of these plays that we think we know by heart, and yet there still seems to be more to be done. Or is that just because the whole process of making theater allows for so much difference?
I think both. I think Shakespeare is so great that he can accommodate, and within him you can find many different plays for each play. I think that's true of the Greek plays. I think it's true, you could say it's true of all really good plays, because a play, after all, is a mystery. There's no narration. And as soon as there's no narration, it's open to interpretation. It must be interpreted. You don't have a choice. And in that fact is also the fact that each play can become many things. And of each final version, you'd have to say that it was contained in the original, in what the playwright wrote, because plays are possibility. That's what they're made of. And it's one of the reasons I can hate a play, as I did Mr. I also hated Hedda Gabler, because
Have a thing about Ibsen, that's all.
Well, there was that. But there were, no, Ibsen and what's his name, one.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, that one.
Yeah. Strindberg.
Strindberg. Yeah, I thought he was a pain
in the ass. It's Scandinavians you don't like.
Until I saw Patrick Marber's version, I didn't like Strindberg either. But Hedda Gabler in Summerstock was a nightmare, take my word. And then I saw Ingmar Bergman's version of it with Maggie Smith and Bob Stevens, in fact. And it was unbelievable. It was so thrilling.
My guest is Mike Nichols, who is directing a new production of Harold Pinter's play Betrayal, starring Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz, and Rafe Spall. You've said that Ilya Kazan was a great director because he turned psychology into behavior. How does that work here?
I think that that's something that happens in every production. It's just how eloquent is it? How expressive is the behavior? What can you find in what the actors are doing that reminds you of life as you've experienced it? It's the job of the actors and the director and the designers and everybody who works on a play to bring life to what is a blueprint.
So you have to look beyond the text.
You must look beyond the text. You must look to... You have to do all those analytic things. What is the theme, if I can find it? What is the hope of the characters? What is there a conclusion? Very rarely is there a conclusion, but what is the story? What is it about? And what is there that can remind the audience of their own lives? What are you trying to achieve? You're trying to achieve the thing that can happen in the dark, is that someone sits there and thinks, my God, I am that man. That's me. And it can happen and does happen. I remember seeing plays when I was very young, when I was in the middle of high school. I saw Streetcar Named Desire, the original. And I think that's why I'm in the theater, because I was so stunned by how shockingly real it was and how poetic at the same time, and how I couldn't get it out of my head, more than things in my own life. And I think that to make something alive instead of on a page is an honorable task, and it turns me on.
Well, I saw the original production of Long Day's Journey and Tonight, and although it had nothing to do with my life, I still was overwhelmed by it. It was also incredible acting and a very great cast in the original production. But O'Neill just pulled it all together for that play.
Well, that's very interesting that you should say that, because I remember seeing that production, and I believe I was very young.
Well, I was.
Yeah, so then...
High school.
It's likely that I was, too. And what struck me about it, aside from the fact that I was totally awash and very moved by it, I kept thinking, in my family, people basically said, stop it, you're doing, look what you're doing to me. But in the family, in that play, what struck me and still does is they suffered only for one another. Not for one moment in that very long play does anyone suffer for anybody else, for themselves rather than anybody else. They suffer only for one another, and it ennobles them and makes them worth our time.
My guest is Mike Nichols. We are talking about theater, obviously. He is directing a new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal, which will be opening on October 27th at the Ethel Barrymore Theater on West 47th Street. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Mike Nichols, who's directing a new production of Harold Pinter's great play, Betrayal, starring Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz, and Rafe Spall. It opens on October 27th, and it's at the Ethel Barrymore Theater on West 47th Street. When you were last here talking about Death of a Salesman, you said that as a kid in private school, you were aware of some of your friends' fathers having breakdowns under the pressure of providing for their families. So you related to the play in a personal way, even as a high school student. Did you relate in a personal way to this play as well?
Oh, I would say so, yes. The whole syndrome of time in relation to a love connection is endlessly powerful, because there's the part where you can't stop yourself, there's the part where you can't think about anybody else, and it goes all the way to the part where you can't stand to get out of there, in some cases. And everyone is different. Each one is different. Each one, if you sample different times in it, is completely different for both people. Then other people come in. There's a third person and sometimes a fourth person. And what Pinter does in this particular instance is he jumps around in time in a way that turns out to be rather the way your head jumps around in time when you think of X, whom you were so hot for, whom you now hate, or Y, whom you'll always love and don't know how you lost, or you name it. That time is such an inextricable part of it.
Is that complicated chronology a challenge to the actors, always keeping in mind what they knew and when they knew it?
I think it's part of the work. I think it's part of doing it, that finally you do figure out where you were then and where you were in the other time.
Well, most plays we watch are to see what happens, to find out how the story ends. In this play, we start up knowing how it ends, but we still watch to find out what happens.
Yes, we do, because it's an extremely interesting play in which three people love each other, and how they love each other, and what they exact from each other, and who is guilty and who is not guilty. And then you have to look at your own life. When we started to work on this play, I was appalled to realize, when I thought back, that one of the very first things I did in high school was I was at a party and I saw a girl with my best friend. And I happened to know that they were going home separately. And I had to see this girl. I had to. And I waited and I waited and I found her and I got her. And I took her away from my best friend. And there's certain things that...
Did he ever forgive you?
He never knew. That I know of, he never knew to this day, because we didn't stay together all that long and they hadn't stayed together all that long. And we were in high school and, you know, nothing was very serious. But she was a magical, exciting girl. And the thing that struck me so about it was that I had no guilt whatsoever. It was the first shock that I couldn't have cared less. And I didn't even know what that meant. It was so startling. And I was very successful with her. And she was hilarious. I truly loved her. And then she was gone. And then he and I went on being friends, and I don't think he did know. If he did, he never told me. And it never became important, except I had learned this terrible lesson that you can be absolutely without guilt and just go ahead and do something.
Well, are there surprises to be found in the past, what we thought were true, what we assumed to have happened or to have been causal?
Enormous surprises and crucial surprises to be found. It's one reason that back when psychoanalysis was in vogue, people had adventures of discovering that things in their past were not what they thought they had been and so forth. It's sort of, psychoanalysis has receded in people's awareness, all of us. But the looking back that art does and the analyzing that art does is perhaps more at least more useful in our daily lives, and that it very often concerns itself with that most mysterious thing of the relationships that change, the relationships that never change, the relationships that go from one extreme to its opposite. All these things that happen, what they say about you, what they say about the other people, and can you draw conclusions from them? All these questions are hard to answer.
Well, is that the ultimate betrayal, that we didn't really understand what was going on as it happened?
Had no idea. I think that's the main thing, that we never know what's happening, really. But the other thing that fascinates me, and I think that it's one of the things in betrayal that is so striking, is that there are absolutely almost perfect people who experience no guilt. They don't know what it is. They simply do what they need to do or want to do next. They see nothing wrong with it. They feel no guilt. They express no guilt. And it's not even certain what harm they do. But the fact that they exist and that they can be very good people, sometimes the best, and simply not find guilt useful or interesting, is one of the things I think that play is about, and I think that it's very interesting in life.
My guest is Mike Nichols, who's directing a new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal that stars Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz, and also Rafe Spall. It opens on October 27th at the Ethel Barrymore Theater on West 47th Street. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So we've talked about some of the things this play is about. Is it also about sex?
Oh, sure.
When where there's sex, there's always the risk of betrayal, isn't there?
There's always the risk of betrayal. And as we know, the desire for sex and the desire that is expressed in sex doesn't have guilt or feelings or anything at all except a strong insistence. And we also know that that's what leads to pretty much all the interpersonal problems that exist. But how different people deal with it, how people accommodate each other, what people find and in what size groups is infinite, and I think also infinitely interesting.
Well, there's also male friendship in here, and in male friendship there's also a big risk of betrayal.
Absolutely. In life there's a big risk of betrayal, and very often the absence of betrayal is not remarked when somebody is incapable of betraying anyone, or especially significant people to them, and they never get the credit for it. They just don't do it and won't do it. People tend not to get credit as much as they get blame, and they're all useless. And that's one of the things the play tells you. It's no use. It doesn't make any difference.
This is not the first time that you've handled the themes of infidelity, The Graduate, Carnal Knowledge, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Real Thing. Infidelity is a theme in all of them. Is there something that brings you back to that?
I think there is. I think my first memory of any memories whatsoever is my gym teacher ripping a necklace off my mother and throwing it out the window, and her running downstairs to get it. That is my actual first memory.
How old were you?
I must have been three or four. I think that for various reasons, there was a lot of infidelity in my family when I was growing up.
So you suspected that your mother had had an affair with this man because of the amount of emotion that was being displayed here?
Well, in retrospect, I mean, a three-year-old doesn't suspect anything.
Yeah, how old were you when you thought back to that and thought, oh, gee, they must have been having an affair?
Oh, I was like adolescent. I was 12, 13, 14. But I had by that time noticed many things. My mother had a lot of boyfriends. My father had a lot of girlfriends. And I saw it all the time. And then a friend of my father's, who oddly enough was a movie director, took me to lunch. By this time, I was married for the first time myself. And he said, you're sort of on your father's side in all this, aren't you? And I said, I guess you could say that I am. And he said, well, what if I told you that your father had a Madonna complex? He could get it up with everyone except your mother. Would that make any difference? And I said, well, in a way, it's too late, because my feelings are my feelings. I wish I'd known then. But you can't tell that to a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kid. And I can't help how I feel. But it was very prevalent in my life. And I saw it all around me, and I saw it all around me in other people, too, as I was growing up. And then, of course, I saw it in my own life almost immediately. When I did it in high school, God help me. And it's something you're always learning about until you get out of that particular game.
When you begin to plan a play, do you start out imagining the casting? Daniel Craig, it's reported you courted him for 2 years, but weren't you thinking of him as Jerry rather than as the husband here?
Well, let's remember about journalism. I didn't court him for 2 years. I mentioned
this
it to
is
him
the internet.
Once a couple of times, and then we talked about it again a year or two later because we were back in the same city. I know him to be a great actor from some of the less popular movies that he's made.
Because it takes a lot of imagination to see James Bond as the cuckold. He's the guy you cheat with, not the guy that you cheat on.
Well, yes and no. You know, he was cheated on when he played Francis Bacon's lover. He was cheated on daily by the actor who played Francis Bacon. He was miserable, drunk in the Mother. You know, he played many, many people. He can be a lot of people. He's a remarkable actor.
And then was it natural to have Rachel Weisz join the cast as
well? Well, Rachel Weisz is a great actress and a great beauty. And it was very hard not to think of her for this part. She's done lots and lots of brilliant work on the stage. And in the movies, she's incredibly attractive, and she is married to Daniel. I mean, where's the problem?
And she said that she'd love to do Virginia Woolf with Daniel in 10 years or so.
I'd love to direct them, but of course my age would preclude it at that point. They'd have to carry me around.
Now, I mentioned earlier that this play is opening a week earlier than planned. What happened there?
I think it just had to do with the theater and the set going in and stuff like that. We had enough previews. We have a month of previews, and that was enough for everybody.
Because you've also said that before you do some plays like Chekhov or Beckett, you have to step backward, and they get harder every day.
I think that's true. I found that to be true with Beckett and Chekhov. That they take one polite step backward every day and they move away from you as you pursue them. I haven't found that with any other playwright so far. It's certainly not Pinter. Quite the opposite. That every day working on Pinter, you see more things. It seems to be endless.
Now, we've run out of time, but I wonder whether you'll ever do comedy again. After all, the way I first heard about you and enjoyed seeing you was when you were doing comedy with Elaine May.
Well, personally, I don't think I'll be doing it. But on the stage, I think you might find some laughs in what we're doing now.
And you also were originally cast as the shrink in The Sopranos, weren't you? Peter Bogdanovich got that role?
No, I was not the shrink. I was her shrink.
Yeah, the shrink.
No, but I was, I was Mrs. Soprano's shrink for a half a week when I fired myself. I said, you need another Jew. I'm the wrong Jew for this particular shrink. And David Chase and I became friends through that self-firing and have consulted on various things since. I was very sad to go because it was an honor to be in The Sopranos and to work with those people. But I just couldn't stand it as a director that I was the wrong Jew.
Mike Nichols.
A good title for my biography.
The wrong Jew. Mike Nichols. But we're not talking about this proposed biography. We're talking about a new production of Harold Pinter's Betrayal, which stars Daniel Craig, Rachel Weisz, and Rafe Spall, and opens on October 27th at the Ethel Barrymore Theater on West 47th Street. Mike Nichols, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Pleasure.